Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican consultant Christine Dudley, Democratic attorney Mary Hartigan, and Republican Anthony Anderson. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, the National Radio Hall of Fame Gallery Studios in Chicago on State Street, that great street where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Obviously, we'll be talking a little bit later in the broadcast about the another big takeout in the war against terrorism, President Obama and the experts that have been waging this war with the drones, managing the drone program, getting the number two guy or the surviving leader of Al-Qaeda. And again, that was another big win for the United States in their war against terrorism. But again, lots happening in the world of politics. And one of the most interesting things is the latest Fox News poll in the Republican preference. And this is the top three has changed a bit. Mitt Romney remains in first place at 23%. Rick Perry at 19%. And look at this. Now moving into the top tier, Herman Cain at 17%. Statisticians would say that's almost a virtual tie. And Herman Cain has picked up 6 points since he did well in the Florida straw poll and the increased exposure that he has received. Newt Gingrich heads up the second tier at 11%. Ron Paul at 6%. Michelle Bachmann at 3%. And again, Rick Santorum having fun spending other people's money, and John Huntsman spending his kids' money. I don't know, but they're still in there, but they're not showing up anywhere, and in my view, not likely to show up. Maybe Huntsman, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, that's my little editorial comment. This morning, I watched Herman Cain. And by the way, last week on this program, when we talked about Florida, I said, well, I hope Herman Cain is enjoying himself because that's probably going to be the high point of his campaign. As I said in my introduction about these polls, there has been a great deal additional exposure for Herman Cain. He was on with Christine Amanpour today. He was on with Fox News today with Chris Wallace. And I was impressed with what I saw today. And so my question to you, Anthony Anderson, welcome to Beyond the Beltway.
Thank you very much,
Bruce. Listening to us on radio, you are an African-American Republican.
Sure.
There aren't too many of you folks.
Yeah, you can probably count us all on one hand, actually, in the state of Illinois especially.
But here's my question to you, I want everyone to respond to this, especially those listening to the broadcast. Can the Republican Party nominate Herman Cain, in your view, in your heart? Can the Republican primary voters nominate Herman Cain?
I think, in my view, in my heart, Herman Cain can absolutely be nominated for the presidency of the United States of America. It's obvious that he's probably one of the most, not one of the most qualified, but he is qualified to be our commander-in-chief. He's been in several business ventures, and he's shown his ability to lead, not only himself, but other agencies or other ventures that he's been a part of.
Christine Dudley is our card-carrying Republican, carried that card for many, many years. You've worked in a lot of campaigns, worked for a lot of moderate to moderate conservative Republicans, part of the George Bush campaign, the first George Bush. Do you believe that Herman Cain can win the nomination? Is that within the realm of possibility?
Tactically, probably not. Although, to your point and to Anthony's point, he has struck a chord out there above and beyond the support that he received in Florida. He was here in Illinois this weekend and
won the Tea Party rally
at TeaCon, which was a gathering of Midwestern Tea Party affiliate groups. And what I read in the newspaper, I was traveling this weekend, but I read that he won that straw poll as well. So I think that he has struck a chord. Tactically, I think it'll be very difficult because I think, as the listeners know and the folks around this table know, the money and resources that it takes to run a presidential campaign are pretty awesome, not to mention ballot access and some other tactical things. But I do think he has struck a tremendous chord, and I agree with everything that Anthony said in terms of his common sense approach and his background.
And he won at TCON with about 70% of the vote there. Although it was a low turnout, some of the candidates didn't even come to that convention. But, you know, that goes without saying. 600 people came, but in terms of
Mary Hardigan is our Democrat, and we let the Democrats speak as well. Mary, in your view, looking at it from across the aisle, you're for Barack Obama.
Yes.
You're going to be for Barack Obama no matter what happens.
No matter what happens.
Well, okay. I'll pull that last. Yeah. I withdraw that, Your Honor. So we treat this like the court of public opinion here. Do you believe that Herman Cain is a viable candidate for President of the United States?
I do. I agree with Christine, however, that tactically and money-wise, he has a very hard row to hoe. Also, some of the opinions that he has expressed, I think, might be very good for in certain primaries, but maybe not in others.
Which do you think is the most, in your view, the most egregious answer he has to a question that you've heard?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, it's so depressing to listen to all of these people that I kind of lump them all together.
Okay.
What do you have to do to be a conservative
these days? It's a long list of people that you're not going to vote for.
You've got to think that there's no such thing as evolution, that global warming doesn't happen,
that
don't ask, don't tell, it would save the American military. I mean, the list of things you have to believe to be a conservative these days, it's just thinking people. I really don't – thinking – my Republican friends in Illinois, they just can't believe the kinds of things coming out of the mouths of Perry and Bachman and Gingrich. You want one of these folks to win it.
But I want to go back to
– No, I don't. I want somebody who would be a good president to win.
Okay.
And none of the people that are running, I think, would be a good president.
So you want a strong Republican candidate –
Yes.
Who is close?
Good for the country.
Close to Obama in positions, although you're not going to vote for him.
Well, I think Obama's too conservative, but
But John Huntsman,
yeah,
you may like a
absolutely.
John Huntsman. Okay, I want to go back to the core of the question. What I saw today with Chris Wallace is I saw someone who was presidential. Herman Cain, to me, for the first time, looked presidential. His demeanor was presidential. He was affable. At least the questions today, they were in his wheelhouse. I thought he answered them well. And that's why I really want to push this issue about his electability and his ability to be nominated by the Republican Party. And I would really like to hear from people around the country about whether or not you believe with that at all. 1-800-723-8289. Is Herman Cain electable? But the bigger question is, can Herman Cain really be nominated by the Republican primary voters? That's what I want to know. I want to hear from Republican primary voters. I'm Bruce Dumont. Cleveland, Ohio, and Phoenix, Arizona. Hopefully they're all tuned in to Beyond the Beltway this evening on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio, 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about, at least in the first portion of the program, Herman Cain. And I think it brings up something that, you know, if a candidate gets exposure, they go up in the polls. They get invited to be on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Then they get invited, you know, to go head against themselves, you know, on the Sunday morning shows, as was the case today. So the more you talk, the more ability that you have to show yourself and to talk about your messages. And when I go back to Herman Cain, I go back to the credibility, because at the beginning of the campaign, the news media determines the top tier. And in this particular case, Then they wait to try to adjust the field by urging people to get in. They want to. They don't like the field, so, you know, let's get Rick Perry in the race. And the media drumbeat to get Chris Christie in this race is deafening. And in my view, I think my colleagues in the national media, because they're so busy trying to get Chris Christie in the race, they may be missing what's really happening in this race, and that is that Herman Cain may be for real. And I will tell you that if you thought that the upset of Hillary Clinton 4 years ago by a relatively unknown Illinois state senator, Barack Obama, was a political revolution, I will tell you right now, if Herman Cain catches fire, you're going to see a transformation and a revolution of politics that we have not seen in the last 50 years. Because there could be, which is something that Herman Cain spoke about today, is that maybe the lock on the black vote by the Democratic Party may change. Mary, are you worried about that?
Of course.
Would you agree with my point? Would you agree with my point that if Herman Cain were to get the Republican nomination, it would be tantamount to a political revolution in the country?
Well, it'd be a
political. That would send all kinds of signals to all kinds of people.
It would be a political revolution, but I think that, like most people, that when you poll African Americans on the issues, they don't agree with Herman Cain. So I don't really. I think
they don't know Herman Cain.
They know the issues that they agree with Democrats and that they agree with President Obama on. And when you poll after poll, Latinos, blacks, the majority of whites.
I got to hear from
the
Anthony.
Country.
Anthony, I asked you before we went on the air. You said you're for Rick Perry. How come you're not for Herman Cain?
Well, it's not that I'm not for Herman Cain. I just think that Rick Perry is probably the best candidate out of the field.
Why?
Because I think that out of all the conservatives that's on a panel or that's being debated now, I think I'm going to get about 80% of what I'm looking for out of a candidate like Rick Perry. I don't agree with him particularly on the immigration issue insofar as, you know, illegal immigrants or kids of illegal immigrants getting tuition. But, you know, I can
get
around that.
What about the story of the Washington Post today that his family once owned a ranch in Texas, where the N-word was part of the branding, the naming of that ranch? Now, again, he's trying to explain it away.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest it's probably a story that's not going to go away real quickly.
Right.
But as an African-American, what is your response to that? What does that say about his upbringing?
Well, many people have different backgrounds. I don't think Rick Perry, for the most part, condones racism or any type of violence connected with racism. So I wouldn't hold him accountable to what was being said years ago on his ranch or his family's ranch. That's not the Rick Perry that we know today. So why would I hold him accountable to those issues that were happening in the past? It's not Rick Perry that I know.
Christine, how serious is that story in the Washington Post today?
Well, I thought it was rather troubling. Kind of caught my eye, you know, off to the side when you're reading through all the morning papers. And I think that at the end, but there is a cultural divide. I've spent some time in Texas. I've done politics in Texas in the mid-80s. And the prolific use of that pejorative was stunning to me. In East Texas, it was explained to me that it was very much a part of the culture, not necessarily meant to be a pejorative. I don't agree with that, by the way. And believe me, my hair was standing up on the back of my neck. That being said, Perry has said his father rented the property. This was on some stone. His answer is sufficient in that I understand he's in a tough situation here. That being said, I think the media will continue to move this story. I think that there will be pieces of this story that will kind of spring out. They'll be looking for other pieces of it. They had 6 or 7 people who attested to it. It was just that
Cain said it demonstrated insensitivity.
Yeah, I think. Well, yeah. I mean, but culturally, I think there's a lot of insensitivity in the culture in Texas and in part of the South.
Exactly. We have lots of callers on the line. Greg, listening to us in Indiana on WLS Radio. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you?
Hi.
Okay. I have a couple points I'd like to make, if I may. First of all, before I do that, Bruce, I called your show several months ago, and I mentioned Herman Cain. And I think you had Dan Proft on or something like that. And because your first thing to me was, who's Herman Cain? and then Dan or one of your other guests had said that he had seen him. And I listened to him when he was a talk show host in Atlanta, so I've got a real good thumb on his pulse in terms of what he's all about. He's a strict constitutionalist, which I am. He's an incredible businessman whose specialty was taking over failing businesses and turning them profitable again. And God knows the United States government could use that, because it's a failing government from a financial point of view. And I just think he has common sense solutions, and he's not a politician by any stretch of the imagination. Thank God.
I'm going to ask you the question, and again, sure. There may be some people that are waiting on the line that that want to address this as well, and I want to address it right now. I want to be affirmative in addressing this. When I ask that question, can Herman Cain win the Republican nomination? The real question is, will the Republican primary electorate, can they vote for a black man to be their standard bearer? That's the real question.
Absolutely.
That implies, and by the way, I'm the one that said it, that implies that the color of someone's skin might be more important to a Republican primary voter than it is to a Democratic primary voter. That was not the intention of the question, because I would say is I don't think racism in this country has a political partisan or a political label on it. We said the same thing back in the primaries involving Democrats, involving Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And the history of racism within the Democratic Party is not a great record, my friends. And if the Republicans had a Republican strategy, which some people believe is anti-black since 1968, the Democratic Party had it for 150 or 100 years before that. And again, when you're talking about, you know, whether Hillary Clinton is going to win in Western Pennsylvania and in West Virginia and in the suburbs of New Jersey, when you're talking about those questions, you are talking about racism. You're talking about whether or not Democrats can vote for a black man. So I am now asking the question. I haven't heard this discussed on national TV or radio yet. I'm asking the question right now. The discussion of this issue as it relates to Herman Cain and his electability goes to the core of the question that basically it was the same question I think Barack Obama was putting before voters in some states 4 years ago. Mary, I want to get Mary's response to what I just said.
Well, I think that when you have a group of people whose answer to every question posed by the president is that it's a Kenyan Muslim socialist trick to destroy the country, that tells you a little bit about what they're thinking about who is other in our country. And I think that
but
for those
slice.
Core
it's
voters,
a slice. You think it's a much greater slice of the Republican, you know,
primary electorate.
I've been in the Republican Party now for almost 20 years. This phenomenon that Mary's speaking about, I don't see it. Not in Illinois, at least. I'm not saying that there's not racism within the party, but every party has its ups and downs. But to say that it permeates the culture of the Republican Party, I just think that's a little bit disingenuous.
Let's go to Idaho, Meridian, Idaho, where Bob is listening to us on KBOI. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a big fan of Herman Cain. And I can tell you, Rick Perry's racist thing, that's back when he was a Democrat, if you remember correctly.
Good point.
1983, correct?
Good point.
And
I don't think they mentioned that in the Washington Post today.
No, I don't think so either. And of course, Herman Cain can win the Republican nomination. He's going to win Idaho, I think. And the condescension saying that Republicans won't vote for a black man, look up your history. Republicans include Abraham Lincoln. So it's really nonsense. And you hear people like your Democratic guest saying Republicans are racist. Look at the Democratic Party in Illinois in the 60s and the Democratic Party in the South in the 60s, they were the ones fighting against the 64 Civil Rights Act.
Good, good.
Ridiculous.
Good. No. That your point is well taken, and I think that this will be the other part of this is, you know, Herman Cain also said on the programs today that he wished that he would have stood up when the gay soldier was booed at the recent debate. Again, wishing that you would have done something as opposed to doing it is you don't get too much credit for that.
Yeah, but he stood up and he said something that a lot of people were scratching their head. I have to say, I give him. Points for that, because at least he brought up the issue and spoke to it, and I think the others have really stepped away from it, and I think that's unfortunate.
1-800-723-8289. More calls. We got a lot of callers. Herman Cain, is he nominatable? From Wallace, Idaho to Trenton, New Jersey, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Our Democrat tonight is Mary Hartigan. She is an attorney. Christine Dudley joins us. She is a Republican political consultant. And also making his first visit to us this evening is Anthony Anderson. He is chairman of the Republican Precinct Project. Their goal is to put a Republican precinct committeeman in every county in Illinois, which, believe it or not, does not happen. He's a used to be a Lance Corporal in the United States Marine Corps. He now works for the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice and is a card-carrying Republican. As says, there's a small group of. Are you the first African American? By the way, you are chairman of this this group that I mentioned.
Yes, I'm the chairman of the Republican Precinct Project. It's a statewide organization dedicated to filling the positions of precinct committeemen throughout the state of Illinois. Currently, there are about 6,700 precincts in Illinois. And there's about a 50% vacancy rate, meaning about 3,500 precincts are currently unfilled.
And by the way, when you're out, you know, socially and politics, the subject comes up. Are you frequently asked why are you a Republican?
Oh, not at all. I mean, I get that more from blacks rather than whites, because most blacks feel that, hey, listen, Anthony, just why are you a Republican? What is it that draws you to the Republican Party?
And what's the answer?
And I tell them all the time, hey, listen, fiscal responsibility, less government, and I just want government out of my life and the lives of others. That's all I want.
All right. Does that mean that you, on the issue of civil unions for gays and lesbians, where do you come down on that issue?
Well, for the issue of civil union, I believe that, you know, I really don't want to get into – I don't get into those arguments because, I mean, most people I feel should have the ability to do whatever it is that they feel is necessary in order to lead their lives.
So you're a libertarian in a lot of issues.
And yes, in most ways, yes. You could say that.
Okay. By the way, we should mention that the Museum of Broadcast Communications, their big Radio Hall of Fame gallery opening is coming up at this location where we do this broadcast. It's coming up on Saturday, November 5th, 2011, and it's going to be hosted by Larry King because it will also include the national broadcast. You can learn more about it by going to radiohof.org. And the inductees this year into the National Radio Hall of Fame, Gangbusters, the great reaction to the crime wave of the 1930s, The Great Gildersleeve, one of the great comedy shows of all time, America's first sportscaster, Graham McNamee, who defined sports in America in the 1920s, H.V. Kaltenborn, born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, went on to become the premier news commentator of the 30s and early 40s, Suspense, one of the great drama shows of all time, the WLS National Barn Dance that introduced country music to America, and Ronald Reagan, the quintessential broadcaster of the 1920s and 30s, who fell in love with radio like so many young men did. Again, if you'd like to come to the event, it is a benefit for the Museum of Broadcast Communications, a live two-hour broadcast hosted by Larry King. Go to radiohof.org, and you will be part of radio history, and as will our next caller. Let us go to Joseph, listening to us on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. No, I guess that's not true. I misspoke. Let's go to Susan, listening to us in Atlanta on XM Sirius Radio tonight. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to put my two cents toward about Herman Cain.
Okay.
I think he's very electable, and I think the Republican Party is smart enough to actually elect him. He's got so much going for him. He's smart. he speaks on the level that everybody he was speaking to can understand. And I think that once, now that the media has actually noticed him, I think he's going to start picking up some steam.
Susan, you're from Georgia, and that's where Mr. Kane resides. Can you tell us a little bit more about him from a Georgian standpoint, just as he's coming on and becoming more noticed? Maybe you've got some other information about him, having him in your community.
I'd like to think that I do, but I don't. I'm really just starting to get to know the man myself. He came to my town. I live actually outside of Atlanta in Fayetteville. And he came to a rally down there, and I got to hear him speak last year for the first time. But I can tell you that from the state point of view, people like him, and they know that he's a smart businessman. They know that he could do a lot for this country, and he's very electable on many, many levels.
Thanks very much for your call. We're 40 minutes into this program, and we have not talked about the other big story of this past week, and that is Chris Christie, whether he's getting in, whether he's getting out. What would you like Chris Christie to get in this race, Chris?
Personally, I like Chris Christie a lot.
Why?
I like his background. I like his attitude. I like what he's done in New Jersey. Before the broadcast, we spoke, and you asked if I had met him. I'd only been present when he'd spoken once here in Chicago, and I have to tell you, his attitude alone won me over. That being said,
he's also a moderate Republican.
I think so, but he's more moderate than conservative. Yeah, but he's also an Irish Catholic, you know, guy from New Jersey. So I think that the stepping aside, but he got elected in New Jersey.
He favors civil unions,
correct? And well, it's my understanding that he is not going to make any changes in the New Jersey laws as it relates to the social issues. That being said, you know, he does have an Irish Catholic background and four kids and all of that. But I think personally, I like him. I like again what he's done in New Jersey. I like the way he speaks, and he's a former prosecutor, and he understands how to frame an issue, and he also doesn't back down.
Does this race need him as a Republican? Does this field right now need another candidate?
I can't answer that. I think. As an operative and looking at the tactical. I'd hyperventilate over what has to be done in order to, and I agree, Mike Murphy this morning, another revered Republican operative, made a very good point about Christie. He said by Thursday, he should tell all of these folks who have come to him, to say you need to run. Okay, let's do a super PAC and let's put, you know, $50 million in the basket and then I'll be able to do it. And I think tactically that is exactly correct. You've just got so much. This season is ramped up so much sooner than it has in the past, and he's going to have to make a decision this week, one way or the other.
Do you want Chris Christie into this race?
Well, I've seen Chris Christie a lot on TV, and I see a plain-spoken individual. I see a person that's not afraid to mix it up, and also he's not afraid to take it to the unions. He addresses the issues that permeate throughout New Jersey's culture by going to the people who he can make the most changes with. And so,
Christie. Part of what you like about Rick Perry is you like the Texas swagger, don't you?
Yes, of course I do.
And you're a big guy. Yes, I'm a big guy. Yes. Okay, we like big guys, right? So the question is,
it's the big guy coalition.
Well, let's talk about New Jersey swagger and Texas swagger. I mean, stylistically, these guys are cut from the same cloth, aren't they?
Yes, sir. I think he is. I think,
but politically, they're different.
They agree on a few issues. They're probably diametrically opposed.
Illegal immigration issue. Mm-hmm. They're on the same side, basically.
Yeah, you can say that.
They're not
willing to rock the boat when it comes to immigration.
But
that's,
I think,
true.
One of the things that Christie, where he's to your point. He has struck a chord as it relates to an issue that you spoke about with pensions and spending, and he actually not only walks the walk but talks the talk, because what he has done in New Jersey, which we have seen being done in state after state, and Bruce, you know this, I'm a huge proponent of governors in terms of being
yep.
the people who should be the next up for the presidency and the incubators in the states where we do things. And I think that from that standpoint, take away all these other issues that you're talking about, Bruce. I think that relatively where he came on the national scene was because he stood up to spending, because he looked at runaway spending and pensions gone awry.
He did that, but also he did that in the wake of being in the media market of New York.
Oh,
and
sure.
Because many of the media people live in New Jersey. A lot of them live in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The fact is that he is in the New York bubble. He's an exciting guy. He's, you know, and because of that, he is getting a lot of the ink right now. All I'm saying is that another, in my view, an equally big story out there, and that is what's happening to Herman Cain. I mean, the Herman Cain thing, as I said in the last segment, the Herman Cain thing, if it got the continued exposure that Christie is getting, you're talking about a potential stake in the heart of the Democratic Party.
But
you really
remember,
are.
Herman Cain's not a governor.
No, she disagrees. Go ahead.
No, look, people are much more focused this season on issues and on what people are and what the platforms of the candidates are, rather than what their personality is.
I agree.
Whether they wear a 10-gallon hat or high heels.
I agree.
For people to vote for somebody where you're in a group of candidates that believe that Hamas has missiles in Cuba and wants to talk about...
You're talking about Herman Cain.
I'm talking about the whole... You keep getting this big brush out and
painting everybody with the same brush. And I think, to your point, I totally agree with you that people are far more focused on issues. They're not as concerned with the narrative. The last election the collective American public fell in love with Barack Obama because of his narrative. Now we're looking at issues. But you can't paint with that. You're always with this extraordinary stuff, the Hamas, Cuba,
right.
People are torturing people. I think that all of those issues if you're interested in finding out, but you can't take out this brush and paint everybody with it and say, everybody's doing that.
And I think that's why Herman Cain is doing so well in the polls, is because he's addressing the issues rather than
the people care about. This Hamas stuff, what are you talking about?
Shortly from Chicago with more talk.
Well, what's...
From Boone County, Illinois, to Harris County in Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. We're asking the question, is Herman Cain nominatable? I think that may not even be a word, but I've just said it here tonight. Nominatable. Is he nominatable by the Republican Party? Let's go to Art in Seneca, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS Radio, Cumulus Radio for Chicago. Go ahead.
Good evening, Bruce and Anthony and everyone else that's there. Thank you for taking my call.
Great.
Herman Cain is absolutely nominatable. Herman Cain is electable. Whether or not he's the best for the office, I don't know. But he could definitely do some good for all of us that are out here. If one listens to Fox News, last week Juan Williams made an interesting comment when he said that he was down in Florida and he saw the reaction to Herman Cain down there, and that he didn't understand it being in Washington. But the way that Herman resonates with the common people is just beyond description. And hello, Anthony, and I know, Anthony, we've met before.
Well, let me say something. Last week, in fact, I think part of it happened on this show. I'll admit, I don't think I said it, but it was said. The reaction to his winning the Florida straw poll, the analysis was that he won the Florida straw poll because people were rebelling and repelling against the horrible job that Perry did in the debate, and that nobody is excited about Romney. So it was a slap in the face that Herman Cain was doing anything positive. And again, I'm trying to you know, change the paradigm of the discussion here, and maybe some of our national colleagues will pick up on it, is because the Herman Cain thing could be historic in nature. Far more historic than, frankly, Chris Christie. If Chris Christie gets in, the reason he will have gotten in is because a lot of people with a lot of money, many of them from Wall Street, many of them cheerleading in the media, he will be the new moderate to liberal, I don't want to say liberal, but moderate Republican from a media area who's getting cheerled into this race. I mean, you know, Rupert Murdoch is a big fan of his. They're trying to cheerlead this guy into the race. And my question is, are they treating Herman Cain fairly and squarely? And if they did, would Herman Cain continue to rise? 6 points in the last poll. Whoa. He's within striking distance of the front runner, and they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars.
You're exactly right, Bruce. I mean, there's an East Coast, you know, bias. But, you know, let's give Governor Christie, he is a former prosecutor, U.S. Yeah. attorney. He is a sitting governor who really does had taken taken flight with the leadership that he exhibited. Herman Cain, people are still getting to know, and he is demonstrating that they like what they see. Is the media always the national media? It's like, you know, the elephants at the in the circus. They grab the tail in front of them, and everybody starts telling the same story over and over and over again, and following each other. That being said, Cain does not have the. He has not been an elected person. So sometimes I think that bona fide tends to be something that because he's the elected folks have their entourage around them that they have access to, that people can talk to, that there's all kinds of sources. And I guess Cain doesn't have that kind of entourage and those kinds of sources.
Which is one of the reasons why I think he's popular. He's a business guy.
Exactly, Bruce. But back to Christie's point.
He's a Main Street guy, whereas he says, you know, Romney is a Wall Street guy.
Well, I can understand what he says when he says it. But the fact of the matter is this. One of the things that he don't have is that political background. That, in the end, would probably be the downfall for
his candidacy. Just from a tactical standpoint, it's probably a good point strategically.
Yeah, but Sam in Myrtle Beach is going to tell us why Cain can't get the nomination. Go ahead, Sam.
No, I just know that he can. Is this going to be Perry or Romney? He could beat Barack Obama. I think anybody who gets the nomination will beat Obama. But as far as this campaign goes, it shows you're out here talking about Rick Perry and what's written on a rock. With all the problems we have in this country, it just shows that Obama can't run on his campaign. The media is going to beat things like this to death for Obama. And it's just ridiculous that we're talking about something written on a rock years ago rather than all the problems we have in this country.
Well, again, I agree with you. It was written on a rock many years ago. But what people will argue, and they'll say, well, you know, he has said on a number of occasions that, you know, his philosophy was really formed in small town, you know, Texas. And the question is, if they were formed in that town, there are going to be some people, some independents. By the way, I'm talking about some independents and some suburban Republicans. That's what we're talking about here. Because if people are turned off by that, that's the group that will be turned off by it. And my question is this. One thing we learned last time, we learned that if there's a qualified African-American candidate running and they are from a predominantly white state, Iowa, they can propel a black candidate. They can propel him and begin a march all the way to the White House. That's what I'm saying. And all I'm saying is, if there was that ability 4 years ago, I'm asking the question tonight, is that same ability exists now? And what I would say is the historic transformation of American politics that would follow would be unlike anything anyone within the sound of my voice has ever seen in their lives, because I think it would open. It conceivably could break the lock that the Democratic Party has on African-American voters. It could transform it. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox, but I have another whole hour for those on radio.
Hey, it's your show.
Next week, we're going to, by the way, our thanks this evening to Mary Hardigan and Anthony Anderson, and also to Chris Dudley for being with us in hour number one. They'll all be back for hour number two. If you're listening to us on radio, if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by our good friend Christine Dudley and Mary Hardigan and Anthony J.C. Anderson. He is the chairman of the Republican Precinct Project. And Chris and Mary are our Republican and Democrat operatives this evening. And we thank you for joining us. 1-800-723-8029. We've got some callers left over from hour number one. We were talking about Herman Cain and asking about whether he is nominatable. I want to take a couple more calls on that. And then I want to talk about some of the other practical things that really will greatly affect whoever the Republican nominee is because of some changes in balloting and primaries and things of that sort. Let's go to Vanna. Is it Vanna with a V?
Yes.
Vanna with a V from Schiller Park with an S. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. I attended TCON here in Chicago over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
And I want to let the panel know that the passion there was overwhelmingly in favor of Herman Cain. In fact, he won that straw poll by 77%. Mm-hmm. And I remember calling you 1 year ago, and I told you at that point he was going to be a force to contend with. He's the perfect example of how someone in this country can come from nothing and become successful with hard work. And that woman on your panel, she's concerned with evolution. I'm concerned with the problems we have in this country with the economy, the tax system, illegal immigration, wars, debt, unemployment, evolution, and the scandals that are going on with Solyndra and the Fast and Furious. Evolution is not even on my list. Herman Cain is a businessman. He has promised to solve these problems. He's not going to have celebrities in the White House. He's not going to have parties in the White House. He's not a politician. I'm sick of the politicians. He's got my full support.
He said today that he wants to change even Hail to the Chief when he walks into the room.
What did he say?
He thinks it should be not hip-hop. He said he thinks it should be updated a little bit. Maybe a little element of gospel thrown in there. He thinks it's a little too staid.
Oh.
Just one of the things he talked about. Anyway. Well, again, thanks very much. Again, in case you just tuned in, we're talking about whether or not Herman Cain can be nominatable. I made the point in the first hour that if that were to happen, it would be even far more historic than what Barack Obama was able to do 4 years ago when no one gave him a chance. And let me ask this question to you, Mary, because you've been you're the Democrat on the panel. If the historic nomination of Barack Obama as the first African-American candidate to be nominated by a major party for president, if that was the big historic story of 3 years ago, what would it say about this country at this moment in our history if the Republican nominee was Herman Cain and that the choices to lead the free world were two African-Americans? What would that say? And the reason I ask that is because there's a lot of people who 3 years ago, when they voted for Barack Obama, many of them were independents, a lot of them were Republicans, and they thought the time had come that this nation addressed that historical moment. And I'm wondering whether those same people would view a one-on-one race between Barack Obama and Herman Cain, talking about issues, not race, issues, would be an incredible historic moment. And if you were turned on by what that meant 3 years ago, it seems to me it would be tenfold if it was a one-on-one between those two men.
Well, of course it would be historic. I mean, that it's sort of stating the obvious. But I think what is going to happen, whomever the candidate is that the messages about bank regulation, the need for infrastructure improvements, the need for school improvement, all of those kinds of things are going to be the issues that people identify with. And when they hear and we talk about those issues and talk about Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare, that the message of the Democratic Party and the Democratic politicians and people.
So
and
it would be about ideas.
Which would
it
be
would
great.
Be about
but I think
ideas,
whoever,
that's good.
I think whoever and is the whoever
let's
is the
not
candidate.
Forget, Anthony. Bruce, that we did have our first African-American chairman of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele. So it's not like it's out of realm of possibility that we may nominate a black for president under Republican Party banner. If you look, Herman Cain, he has probably a few issues that he needs to be resolved. The first thing we have to notice is this, though. He's got to get past the voting block of the blacks. They voted 95% for Barack Obama last year. During the primary with Gore, it was about 90%. And then the other primary with Bill Clinton, 90%. He's going to have to take some of that vote away. He's going to take that black vote away. And one of the things he said the other day, he made a statement how, you know, blacks were sort of brainwashed into voting for the Democrat Party. Well, yes and no. I mean, true, blacks need to get off the plantation of the Democrat Party for sure. But he's got to put it in a way that, hey, listen, they understand. Because you cannot start off a conversation, especially in a black community, by saying that you don't know any better and you all brainwashed.
I'm fascinated by all of this.
Well, here's my question.
And only because I am.
My question to you, though, do they like to be scolded, though? Do they like to be scolded as the Black Caucus was scolded, you know, a week ago Saturday night by the President of the United States?
Well, that was a different scolding. I'm glad.
But
you
it was a verbal whipping.
Yeah, it was. But what Obama failed to realize is who he was talking to. He was given a prison ministry speech to a bunch of congressional members of Congress, and also lawmakers. So he had to remember who he was talking to. Now, why didn't Obama come with that same speech when he was addressing the Hispanic community when it comes to immigration? He didn't have that same speech when he was addressing Israel in terms of Palestine. So why would you tell us that, hey, listen, quit your whining, put your slippers on? If anything, what they need to do is take off the blinders and quit blindly voting for the Democratic Party. It does them no good.
Well, don't you? I think probably moving this discussion to a different issue, and maybe Mary and I can get into it on this, is I've noticed that the president very recently is doing something that you usually do at the beginning of a campaign. He's going back to his base. And all the speeches that he's been giving recently, the Black Caucus, the Equality America, it's really fascinating to me to see that he has to go and shore up that base because it is severely shaky out there for him. So fast forward to our previous conversation, there is a leadership problem here. And he is having problem within his own base. Mm-hmm. We are looking, I think, as Americans, and what we've heard from the callers calling in, is they're looking for somebody who's definitive, who's going to exhibit some leadership. And I'm fascinated, Mary, why do you think he has to go back to the base at this point in his career and and 3 years into his presidency?
Well, I think that is actually what you just said at the very beginning. That's a normal thing that somebody has to do. But here what you have is you have somebody who has bent over backwards, has been slapped by his base for trying to be too bipartisan, for compromise, and he's gotten nothing out of it. And so he has to go to his base to say, look, I am not going to be walked over and bend over backwards for people who aren't interested in compromise, who don't want.
So does that add up to him being able to win? Because his base isn't what brought him to the presidency. It was, as Bruce has pointed out, was the suburban independent vote that brought him to the presidency, and he's lost that vote big time.
No, I think. I think that those people are persuadable. You have about 13% on each side who are not persuadable.
But he's going back to the 13%. He's got to get his people back in line.
1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I am Bruce Dumont from Chicago. From East Liverpool, Ohio, to West Texas. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. More calls in just a moment, but we are going to talk about some of the other things that have been going on. And one thing that, again, was on the news yesterday, and that is Occupy Wall Street, the effort. And it was described in the national media as a left-of-center reaction to the Tea Party movement. And one of our guests, this is our liberal Democratic guest, you have the right to remain silent and let their money speak for you, or you can demand to be heard. Occupy Chicago. Now, were you involved in this? Were you out protesting yesterday?
No.
How come?
Because that isn't my issue, but and I have, and I'm working to elect candidates and who I think will do a change.
How do you read the outpouring in Wall Street yesterday? I guess about 50 or 60 people got arrested, and it was a good old fashioned sit down strike in Wall Street, and there were elements of it happening around the country as well. So this is the left's answer to the Tea Party. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
No, because I think the Tea Party should be down on Wall Street too. If you want to talk about,
I think they are down on Wall Street, but not literally down.
But
on
I mean,
Wall
they should be part of. They should be part of the whole thing if they really believe what their message about accountability and transparency, and that we shouldn't socialize the losses and privatize profits. That's what's happened. If the banks lose a lot of money, they turn around and they say to the guy with a paycheck, give me part of your paycheck so that I can make up my losses. And by the way, I'm going to take a huge bonus, personal bonus out of it. But when they make a profit, they lecture to that same Joe paycheck and say, you are somehow less because you aren't able to be as great and as wonderful as I am. Well, no. If profits are yours, then the losses are yours too.
Where do those voters go on election day, or aren't those voters voters?
I think that those voters are part of the 10% who make up their mind in the last couple of days.
I just think there's going to be a larger undecided this time around. I think that the polling numbers that we've seen early on, I mean, the collapse, the literal, and I don't say this as a partisan, I'm just kind of fascinated by the collapse of the Obama numbers over the summer. Even here in Illinois, his home state, outside of the city of Chicago, I've seen polling numbers that are, you know, I mean, it's just like sand.
It's a protest. People are saying they want him to pay attention.
Well, but if you're protesting, that means you're wondering. Yeah, you're unhappy, and you're wondering what the alternative is, and willing to look at it.
There is no number.
Yeah, Michelle Bachmann's not the alternative.
There is no number. Michelle Bachmann is yesterday's news. there is no number now at this moment in time. Now, it can change. There is no barometer of electability right now that's going in the right direction for Barack Obama.
No, all the numbers are right. And I think, let's be realistic. We've talked a lot about a lot of the candidates here tonight. We talked about Herman Cain. We've talked about the Chris Christie and so forth. But when it comes right down to it, this election is a referendum on the president. And it is a referendum on his policies, on his leadership. And I think that, you know, and this has been written, but I think it's worth repeating. If I'm sitting at the White House right now, I'm not real, you know. I mean, they're trying to move the discussion to something different because the leadership quotient is missing, and they've bumbled a lot of these economic policies.
You know, I want to just pull my last statement back. There's one statistic or one a number that's out there that I find interesting, because when you look at the need to have 270 electoral votes to become president of the United States, people have been saying for the last several years that's shifting to Republicans. There are a lot of Republican governors
with redistricting
in those areas. Those Republican governors have taken strong stands, so they may not be as popular as they were when they got elected. So I think that analysis has to be looked at. And there are now six states that have had double-digit increases in the number of Hispanic voting age population moving to their areas, including North Carolina. And actually, we had a caller from North Carolina. She has just dropped off. So let us go to Alabama. Alabama is not one of those states, but Nevada. In fact, if you looked at those states and you factored them in, they could be an integral part of sort of shifting the numbers as well. Let's go to Alabama. Carol is listening to us on WAPI, one of our oldest southern affiliates. Nice to hear from Alabama tonight.
Yes, good evening. I just wanted to say that Herman Cain is very well qualified to be president. He has truly a remarkable resume. He has a degree in math and physics from Morehead College and Purdue University. He worked for the U.S. Navy. That was part of his physics. I think he had something to do with fire containment
right.
there
on Federal
on
Reserve,
the ship.
Chairman in Kansas City.
Yeah, he was the chairman of the Reserve there in Kansas City. He worked in various degrees at Pillsbury, Burger King, Godfather's Pizzas, everyone knows. He also has been a talk show person.
There you go.
The last 5 years. I know
that will put him right over the top. That puts him over the top.
Out of WSB, I believe, or maybe GST. They're in Atlanta.
Right.
He's a fill-in for Neil Bort.
There you go. Neil,
yes,
member of the Radio Hall of Fame.
Yes, yes, yes. And so he's a no-nonsense guy. You know, he is a stage 4 colon survivor. I am a ovarian cancer survivor now, twice over for the last 6 years. So he speaks from the heart, and he speaks of the truth. The buck's going to stop with him. That's the nice right. thing about it.
Well, with the people, with one exception, the people that have called in and responded to my question about whether or not Herman Cain is nominatable, we've heard more from them than anybody else. No one is called to talk about Chris Christie. So my question to you again, we've got about 35 minutes left. I'd like to know if there's anybody out there that's really excited about Chris Christie getting in the race. We know that the national news media is. And again, I think, I frankly like his personality as well. I like his politics. But the question is the enthusiasm real, or is this a New York media-generated campaign, as was Rudy Giuliani, and as was, to some extent, Hillary Clinton?
Oh, I disagree with the Hillary Clinton
point. Not Hillary.
Yes.
Wow, look at the women. They didn't like that. Okay, so let's see. Hillary was real. Rudy was
Rudy fine. Was real, but I think your point is well taken, Bruce, that it was because of the phenomena of the New York-centric media and so forth. I totally disagree as it relates to Hillary Clinton.
Nobody worked like she worked across the country in every state.
I have heard that, to my point in the earlier segment, here in Chicago it is now fashionable to once again be able to pull out your I was for Hillary buttons in the city of Chicago, which was something that a lot of people kept under lock and key 3 years ago.
All right, I'm going to ask this. This is the loaded question. In 2016, will Hillary Clinton be too old to run for president, Mary?
No. I mean, she wouldn't be even be the oldest. She wouldn't even be the oldest president.
If she was going to be 103, would you give me the same answer?
No. I mean, no.
I don't think so. And I think 2016, to the point that you were making earlier in the segment, the shift in the dynamic as it relates to the Electoral College, as it relates to the nominating process, I think that those are other factors that she would have to take a look at based on what's going to happen in 2012. But in terms of age, honestly, no, I don't think that's a factor for her.
Let's stick with the changes in the process that are before us. Most of the news this past week is focused on Florida trying to start this race and move themselves way, way up.
Which is going to set the whole domino effect up for Iowa and New Hampshire.
All right. Now, what happens? They've done this before.
Yep.
Florida did it before. They were penalized by the Democrats.
But the penalty was withdrawn. They were penalized, and then the penalty was withdrawn.
That's a lot of inside baseball because they will, right. quote unquote, the Republican Party has said 50% of their delegates will be, they will no, will, won't be, will be forfeiting 50% of their delegates. Here's Chris Dudley, just, you know, not affiliated with what they're doing at the RNC Rules Committee. Okay, so we're going to get the opportunity to help with the to put ourselves in a pivotal place in the nomination. And, oh, by the way, the convention's being held in Florida anyway. So if we may not have delegates, but, you know, anybody who wants to go is going to be able to get into the hall. Right. I mean, elect conventions have become
What does it mean practically to the people running for president of the United States? What does it mean when a high visibility, major media state, a very expensive state with a lot of big cities in it? What does it mean just the ability to survive?
Well, I think we saw in the last election, I mean, Giuliani raised, you know, that was his, where he was going to have to run the table, and he didn't do it. Huntsman was looking to do that. I just read that he has moved his operation now to New Hampshire. It changes and the money dynamic in particular, because Florida, you can do a certain modicum of grassroots, but to your point, the media markets there are so expensive. So it's going to shift the paradigm, as you said earlier, effectively, and you add Arizona to that mix with the high Hispanic population.
What?
We got some new history to be written.
When we come back, we're going to look at those first five or six states and see if we can pick a likely winner. 1-800-723-8029. From Olympia, Washington to Columbia, South Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for being with us tonight. Mary Hartigan, she is our card-carrying liberal Democrat. Republican Christine Dudley joins us. She is a political consultant. And Republican Anthony J.C. Anderson making his first appearance, doing a nice job tonight. He is the chairman of the Republican Precinct Project. He is an African-American Republican, and he is from Boone County. For those listening around the country, what's the most famous thing beside yourself from Boone County?
Probably our county fairs. We have county fairs there. They're pretty popular.
Are they cities or towns that people would know around the country? What's the county seat of Boone County?
Belvedere.
Okay.
Yes. Belvedere.
Chrysler plant.
Course,
that
yes.
was Alan Dixon. Was Alan Dixon was from Belvedere? Was he not? Longtime state senator. Alan Dixon, wasn't he from Belvedere?
I don't think so.
No, he's from Southern Illinois. He is still with us, and he was from Southern Illinois.
I bet he was from Belvedere. Anyway. There was also a major tornado in Belvedere at one
time. Just a while back.
But the Chrysler plant was big news back in the 80s when the Chrysler bailout.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
Absolutely.
And anyway, so he is joining us, and also he is you were a Lance Corporal in the United States
yes,
Marine
sir.
Corps.
Yes, sir.
And then you were a correctional officer with the Department of Corrections.
Yes.
And you were a CO. Where did you do your correctional officer?
Down in Danville.
Danville,
Illinois. Okay. It's just 3 hours south of Chicago.
And now you're in juvenile. You're in
juvenile,
the juvenile
justice.
And what do you do exactly?
I'm a dietary supervisor with the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice.
And what advice?
Dietary supervisor.
A dietary supervisor.
Correctional food service supervisor.
So you make sure that they eat the right food.
Exactly. Well, we ensure that the inmates are fed properly here at Warrenville, IYC Warrenville.
Okay. All right. That's very good. Good. Make sure they're all fed properly. Now, let us go to our predictions now, and I'm going to ask, as things stand right now, does everyone at this table agree that Michelle Bachmann is yesterday's news? I said that flippantly, but I say frequently things that are flippant on this.
I think, yeah, she had her moment in the sun with the Iowa caucus. She didn't understand how to sustain it. She's lost staff. She's lost money. And today I read, and I just don't think you can do this, she missed all votes in September in the Congress when she was out campaigning. And I know that there's a certain amount of time that you do lose when you're running for another office, but I just think you got to show up to work.
And do you agree with my assessment at the beginning of the broadcast when I said that Rick Santorum and John Huntsman are wasting their time and other people's money, or maybe Huntsman's own money? They're going nowhere.
Well, I think there's still room for Huntsman. I think that
to win the Republican nomination, Herman Cain is more likely to win the Republican nomination.
I really don't
New Hampshire,
think so.
He's putting his eggs in the New Hampshire basket.
And then he is going to run into South Carolina. I think Romney could. If Romney falters and there doesn't seem to be a strong candidate, I think that that there'll be a lot of people who come behind Huntsman because of his positions and his experience and his quality. You know, his motorcycle rocker qualities.
Motorcycle rocker. Wow. Okay.
his original campaign ad. It was different.
Yeah, it was. It was very different.
Okay. I'm not sure I'm going to buy that one. Iowa.
Yes.
Who will win the Iowa caucus?
Ooh, I think that at this particular juncture on the Republican side, I mean, Republican caucuses have become very narrow in the last few years.
And very religious in Iowa.
Yes, the evangelical community. And I think to that end, I think you're probably looking, and remember, Romney's not playing heavy there. Huntsman's not playing at all. So you got to remove them from the equation from the get-go.
The Mormons aren't even going into the state.
I think Romney's been in there. You know, that's a tough one, Bruce. I'd have to say that, you know, given
Perry.
It's going to happen at the end of December now. So I think Perry and Kane.
End of December.
Yeah. If this.
Yeah, Florida.
Florida moves up, then you keep moving. Everybody keeps getting shoved back, and some, you know, there's a possibility that Iowa could happen by the end of December or the very first week in January.
It's too late for Christie to play in Iowa, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he can go and get something done, but not a lot.
Seriously, I would support. I think it's going to be between Perry and Kane, and I think in the end, Perry's going to win Iowa.
Yes. Perry and Kane.
With all due respect to Iowa, really, I mean, I'm a little over Iowa.
Well, I'm sure the folks listening to us on
and I lived there for a while.
Us in Iowa, Burlington, Iowa.
I love Iowa personally. I lived there for a while. I worked politics there, but really, I'm a little over them. And when it comes to presidential politics,
well,
because I don't think they offer the diversity of the Republican and Democratic Party that is in terms of the process. I'm a little over Iowa.
Okay, well, Iowa always gets picked on, but then they always end up with the caucus. Now, next, New Hampshire. Again, Romney is
ahead. It's Romney's to lose.
And frequently, the person who finishes second there usually makes the headline.
That's true.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Romney to lose? Huntsman?
I do.
All right, now, does Kane, any opportunity for Kane? What about Christie? Well, if Christie gets in, what happens?
I think
Christie's, if he happens to be in, he's going to take some of the vote from Romney. Kane, he's going to have a good go at it, but he'll probably come in at that second person to coming in, but it's going to be Christie's.
And remember, that's a primary, not a caucus, and it's a little different. You're buying Boston media, but you're still having to do the one-on-one retail in New Hampshire. A little over them too, but
I don't think Kane has the political campaign experience or infrastructure.
Although
the
retail plays to his advantage, where you literally can go into those coffee shops and you can hit the streets and shake.
You got to have the advanced people. You got to have the.
Not really.
The whole
you
thing.
Can still go in and just
if you catch on. If Kane emerges, and I'm looking at this list here, if Kane emerges as the darling of the Tea Party, and as Michelle Bachmann, fades away, it seems to me that they could provide the volunteer troops that you're talking about that could show up and help Kane.
Yeah,
and
it takes
on more. It'll definitely push him over the top, I believe.
Now we get to potential. Now, South Carolina is next, but Florida wants to usurp South Carolina.
Right.
All right, let's talk about what happens in Florida. Big state. South Carolina usually has been where the Republican candidate gets coronated, and then they get confirmed in Florida. But now Florida wants to jump in front of them. So what happens in Florida?
Florida's
who
a lot.
Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, Florida's how many states? It's kind of like where we sit right now in Illinois. I mean, you've got
Herman Cain won the straw poll.
I understand that, but that was a straw poll versus a primary.
And
we're talking about, you know, actual
money.
I just think that Chris Christie does well down there. There's a lot of, you know, people who have from the East Coast who retire Romney. And move down there. Romney still does fine. It's five different states.
But does
to Mary's point, it diffused.
Does Perry's comments about Social Security sink him in Florida?
No.
No, I don't.
How about an illegal immigration?
On illegal immigration, I think he may have a problem simply because a lot of the voters down there are more conservative on the issue as it relates to immigration.
Yeah, but,
but
Florida is a whole different immigration thing.
The Cuban,
he has that Cuban contingency to deal with. But for the most part, I think most Cubans are even more conservative than most of the
Yes, definitely.
There's no question. But you're talking about everybody could take a little bit of Northern Florida is more of it's more Georgia.
Yep.
Than, you know, and the even the Republican voters reflect the culture of those different communities within Florida. So I think it's up for grabs. I think Florida could totally be up for grabs.
I think it's a free for all at this point.
South Carolina.
I'm going to sit here and say that my knowledge of South Carolina is limited to what they did when we were trying to get the Declaration of Independence written, and they held it up because they wanted to take out the Jefferson slavery condemnation of slavery. You got to look at the perspective there, and I just think Perry probably is the candidate.
Perry's going to be darling kind of down in South Carolina.
What about Kane in South Carolina? There's not many black Republican in South Carolina, right?
But they've elected an Indian American woman as governor.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So does that represent? Is that a closed primary?
In
other words, can Democrats vote in that primary?
I think.
Could Democrats cross over since there's going to be no Democratic?
As I admitted my ignorance early in the question.
They could come over and vote for Kane.
I could see them both possibly voting for Herman Cain. I mean, he has a brand. I mean, most people see him as a plain-spoken individual. So if he can come across as the individual that can, you know, mend a couple of fences, sure, Herman Cain can pull it off in South Carolina.
Nevada. Now, Nevada was supposed to be a big Romney state, but Romney may be faltering there.
I still think that he has the advantage in Nevada going into this, and again, by the time you get to Nevada, there's going to be a lot more drop-offs. The numbers are going to shift, so it really gives – he's got the staying power in terms of organization and money, and when you get right down to it, then that advantage still plays for him.
And he's also very well-known in the state.
Yeah. I mean, he was – you know. And Huntsman is too, if he could hang in.
Arizona?
Arizona, I think that Romney has an advantage, however, I think by the time we get to Arizona, there'll probably be three or four left. And I think,
at best,
Perry, the immigration situation, that's going to be problematic for Perry in Arizona with Republican primary voters. I think that'll be problematic, which once again, we'll give
it. That's Perry's biggest hurdle is his immigration performance.
His position on providing tax incentive in-state tuition. That is, and the defense of it, and basically suggesting that people were insensitive or didn't have a heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way in which he sort of put down the opposition on that, he's tried to pull back from that. Now, of course, he's talking tough. He wants to put some maybe boots on the border, and maybe even going into Mexico to help the Mexican fight the drug war. That itself could be a suicide pill in a Republican primary. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. We do this program every week from the Museum of Broadcast Communications. And on Tuesday, in cooperation or in collaboration, in association with our flagship station, WLS Radio, we are going to welcome Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels will be here. Don Wade and Roma will be doing the introductions. They do the morning show on our flagship station, and it'll be the first public event we have at the new museum. We will welcome the governor of Indiana, Mitch Daniels.
My favorite governor.
Your favorite governor, and You think he's definitely out? He's not going to. He's not.
Yeah, I was home in Indiana this weekend, and I saw some local interviews with him, and he looks rested and peaceful, and he's got this book out that I'm anxious to read. He'll be he's on his book tour, and I think it's a very thoughtful policy discussion. I think he's out of the presidential contest, but I think that his impact on policy is going to be very strong, and already is.
If you would like to attend, by the way, it starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. Go to WLSAM.com. That's the website for the radio station, WLSAM.com, and check them out for additional tickets if you want to come to the event. Let's go back to calls. By the way, one quick question. Arizona, does anybody want to weigh in on what happens in Arizona?
Well, we were talking about off-air. There's an interesting dynamic in Arizona, and if somebody's listening down there or votes down there, it would be interesting to know. They primarily vote by mail. They do early voting. So it really does shift the time of decision-making because of how they vote. I think over 80% of the votes that are cast in Arizona now are done by mail. So it really does change the dynamic in terms of that decision-making, and I think I wouldn't try to pretend to understand what that could mean to the Republicans, but we're all agreeing that we think it could still be up for grabs in Arizona.
I want to ask the question, everybody. Does Christie get in your view?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
Okay. We got three no's. I don't think he gets in either. Ann in Algonquin, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi there, Bruce. Well, as far as Arizona, as an adopted Arizonan, I think there's still a lot of support there for Governor Perry. That being said, I think the major problem the Republicans have with this coming primary election season is that they just really have so many good, magnificent candidates who know the issue so well, who are so articulate, who have such great resumes that it's really kind of a dilemma for some of us who are looking at all of them and what they can do for the country and how much they have to offer.
That's a completely different list than Mary's looking at. She, I think
well,
she disagrees
I'm
with
not
you.
Supporting all of them. I certainly put Ron Paul and I think Governor Huntsman at the bottom of the list.
And we haven't even said anything about Newt Gingrich.
Newt is, a tremendous a person of great knowledge and great accomplishments with what he did when he was Speaker. But I still have to look at three of them and say, no, you know, which one?
Which one would it be? You think Herman Cain, of those three, Herman Cain is the one that interests you the most?
I wouldn't say the most, but he certainly is up there among the top three. As a minimum, I'd certainly want to see him or Marco Rubio as the VP candidate.
Herman Cain is certainly helping himself in that respect. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Alan Dixon, by the way, is from Belleville. There you go. I was right.
We had a listener who texted me with the Belleville. Right answer. Belleville, not...
Not Belvedere.
Right.
That's it. And that's near East St. Louis.
Correct.
Okay. Got it. As we look, the one name that we have not discussed much, and that is Sarah Palin. Does anybody believe that Sarah Palin gets into the race?
Nope.
Nope.
I'm backing. I want to go.
I think we could do that in a chorus.
I want to go back to your statement at the beginning of the program. Sure. About why you think that Rick Perry is your favorite. And in answering that question, I want to ask the question that everybody sort of gets around to at some point or talks about. What's wrong with Mitt Romney? Why has he not been able to close the sale, shut the door,
well,
keep people from getting into this race?
What Mitt Romney's position is, no one know who was Mitt Romney on any particular day. I mean, he's Mitt Romney, the conservative, on one day. He's Mitt Romney, the moderate, on another day. So his position changes from day to day. You don't really know where Mitt Romney stands on some of the more crucial issues that face this country today.
So you don't trust him?
Absolutely not.
He's not authentic?
At all.
And you think that being a one-time Democrat, you think Rick Perry is?
Well, Ronald Reagan was a one-time Democrat.
Good answer. What do you think?
I think that
is authenticity the biggest problem?
Oh, I think authenticity is a very important part. And I think, I remember the first time Mitt Romney became part of my consciousness was when he ran the Olympics. in Salt Lake, and the magnificent job that he did in taking that from really was going to be a terrible situation to, you know, making it a terrific situation. And I think that's the Mitt Romney that we're seeing more of in this election. And I think this combination of folks as it relates to this election cycle and him having run once before, I think has actually been very good for him to your point, to make him define where he stands and how he's presenting himself on the policies.
Steve, you got 30 seconds calling from El Paso, Texas. You like Huntsman and Romney. Why?
Well, it's not that I like them. They're the only two right now that I could support. You know, I've been an anti-Obama activist for many years and going to Tea Party rallies, but I see something disturbing developing. All of the candidates, except for Romney and Huntsman, are creationists. Huntsman and Romney are the only two that are willing to stand up and say, yep, evolution is a fact. And the others, I don't want a president who's got this delusion that the Earth was, you know, created in 10,000 years and blood is real. It's not a good thing to have in the presidential office.
Okay, that comes back to a point that Mary made at the beginning of the program.
No, my point wasn't specific about that. It's just that there's
seconds.
So many crazy, crazy things that these people are saying. How could they ever be president of the United States? I just don't know.
Well, on that rhetorical note, we will say farewell to Christine Dudley, Mary Hartigan, and Anthony J.C. Anderson making his first appearance on this program. Thank you all for being with
us.
Thank you.
This is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Tom Veracruz for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.